Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Becky and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. If you are looking for a home group, we would love to have you. Our business meetings are on the third Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. on Zoom. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as recordings of our meetings. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions, such as the cats in my background. Breakout room discussions and end at 12:53, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Jamie to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jamie. I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore our sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defective characters. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continue to take personal inventory and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Jamie. Today we will hear a talk on step 12. I'm supposed to read step 12, but I don't have it handy. But Jamie just read it, so hopefully that'll be good. Please give a warm welcome to Elizabeth from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, alcoholic. Yes, I am gonna turn it back to gallery. I love step 12 and there's so much to it, but this morning I've been thinking a lot about where it says having had a spiritual awakening. I've been sober since January 3rd, 1988. I'm so grateful for that. I've had different phases of recovery in AA, and a lot of learning I've had in the past year from getting online and going and hearing lots of speakers talk about the solution. I'm not a big fan of Drunkalogue, so I never really listen to speakers very often, but I get online now and I want to hear, how do I apply these steps in my life? What does it mean? What is my, I learned more about what my alcoholism was this past year. I didn't even know what it was. I thought it was this little collection of things. And then maybe for all these other things, I need therapy or something else. You know, why can't I get along with people? Why are people getting upset with me? Why am I an emotional roller coaster? Why does my well-being seem to depend on how my life is going? All of that I learned this year is untreated alcoholism. I have a problem in the mind. It's in our book. It says it in our book, but I couldn't seem to see what was, I can recite parts of the book, but I couldn't see where it was in my life. And this year I've had the opportunity to practice step 12 in a way that I never have before. I didn't sponsor people for a long time. I could never find newcomers. I was very busy with children. I wasn't very active in AA. I didn't do service. Oh God, really? No, no thanks. That's for the other people. They can do it. I don't want to do it. You know, all this stuff in this past year, I've had the opportunity to really understand so many things that I've read in the book, but I didn't experience it. And I know, I heard people say things and I could recite them, but to apply them to my life has been a new experience. And I'll give you an example. So it says that we've had a spiritual awakening. What does that mean? I do a lot of service in a newcomer group, and I'm always thinking about them and how these things come across to the newcomer when they walk in the doors here. And why do I, you know, what even are the steps? Like, isn't this just about going to meetings and staying sober? Isn't this just, isn't it like therapy, kind of like free therapy or something? And what's all this God stuff? You know, what are they talking about? Do I have to be Christian to be here? What's going on? So I think a lot about how the steps all work together. And it's pretty amazing to me. Just in this past year, you know, I had an experience. So the spiritual awakening means that I have to change. You don't have to change. It doesn't have to change. He doesn't have to change. I have to change. I have to become a person whose reaction to life is different. My reaction to life before was where I ended up thinking about, or always first thought about, how am I affected by things? I don't mean to be this way. I'm not a jerk, but I don't chemically, I don't have what I need to be okay. I'm not okay. Was I born with this? Did it happen in childhood? I don't know. I know that this is the thing that made me feel apart from, it made me feel not enough and just ready for that first drink that made me feel whole, you know? And then what happened after I took that first drink is what made me an alcoholic. Was I never admitted that I couldn't stop. I stopped in time. I would say I didn't want to stop. I got here kind of by accident. But the spiritual awakening is about, you know, I'm no longer a victim. My thought life is to run around. It says in our book on page 23, you know, this problem is in our mind. It's not in the bottle. I put the bottle. I don't have a drinking problem today. I haven't taken a drink today. Today I have a thinking problem. I run around in life thinking, you know, how can I be okay? How can I get you to like me? How can I make my job the way I need it to be? How can I make my relationship be the way I need to be? Surely I know my husband's not treating me the way I'm supposed to be treated, how I deserve to be treated. I mean, this self-centeredness isn't something that I chose or even understood. I would hear selfish in AA and I would think that it meant that I can't share my toys with you. That's not what it means. It means I'm thinking, how am I affected? You know, 33 years sober, I hear my sister's giving a party. My first thought, what am I going to do when people start drinking? You know, what am I going to do? How I'm going to be affected? Not, oh, she's having a beautiful party. She's a beautiful house. She gives beautiful parties. I'm going to see all these people. Nope. How am I going to feel? Always the first thought. So part of the spiritual awakening for me is to pay attention and see what that thought life is doing. What's going on? You know, we do that in the 10th step. And then to pray and ask God for help. Because I'm telling you what, when I have become aware of how my pride and ego, and we can make arguments for the fact that it's happened in my 32nd year in the past year, okay, where I could really see in action I've heard of what the high road here would be, what my higher power might want me to do in a situation. And when I go to do it, I have this pride and ego that doesn't want to do it. It's like, nope, that's not fair. No, they're not playing by the rules. It's their fault. No, you don't have to apologize. But if I want to be a producer of harmony, if I think that's what my God wants me to do, I need to ask for help. And I had a situation, it was like about a month and a half ago, where I was actually helped to understand that what the right thing to do might be. And yet every time I went to exercise it, I felt so much resistance. And my friend just kept saying, pray and ask God for the willingness. And I thought, oh God, that's right. I heard about that. You know, I remember that's in the book. And I didn't believe it was going to work. You know, no, it's not going to work. Well, how's that going to work? I don't know. You know, I'm logical. I'm intellectual. I don't know how that's going to work. And I kept being told, just keep praying, just keep doing it, just keep doing it. And it took 2 days, but I woke up on the third day and I didn't feel any of that self, any of that thinking it was unfair, any of that thinking it was someone else's fault, any of the fear about it. All I wanted to do was make the situation right. All I wanted to do was create harmony for everyone involved, the unity, you know. And we could probably take a poll and say, yeah, it was might have been that other person's fault, you know, for the conflict might have been their fault in some way. But that's not the point. The point is that I need to be serene and I need to be sober. I have to change myself, even if, you know, I think it's 1% my fault in any way. It doesn't matter what I think. I want this way of life. I want to be sober. So I'm willing. And if I'm not willing, then I pray for the willingness. And that's what the spiritual awakening and the awakening was, that the help comes. I don't know where it's coming from. I still don't understand that. But it comes. And I know that today. So I'm always telling the newcomer, if you don't get anything else out of your first day sobriety, think of the word action. This isn't for people who need it, for people who want it, for people who are, you know, are on their third DUI and facing prison time and losing their kids. It matters what you do. Take the action, because when I take the action and I see the results, I have an experience, and then I'm convinced, and then I see, oh, this thing actually works. I think I'll try it again. Oh, I think I'll try it again. Hey, you know, not worrying about the past, the future, him, her, it, that gives me a quieter thought life. I can give that to my higher power, whatever that is. Here, take this, show me what the next right thing to do is. And when I start to live that way, I have that awakening. I see that it works. And then the other day I had a thing. I'm not going to go into the whole story, but while I'm in the situation, it's like God tapped me on the shoulder. And it was this, basically what it was it was a situation where someone had been kind of a jerk to me in the past. And I had the choice of whether or not to include her in something. And something inside me said, make her feel welcome. And later on that day, and this person had been kind of a jerk to me, later that day, she reached out to me and had told me that she had been lonely and be lucky that I have family around. That's the kind of thing that happens for me. You know, that I put my guard down. I put those walls down. I let people in. I want to promote harmony and unity with people. I'm not thinking about, you know, this little self that got abused or had trauma or whatever is scared of everybody. But it's through getting God into that loop. My God, whatever, that's short for something, by the way, but I use that because it's short. But getting, you know, going to my higher power first and not just keep focusing on myself, you know. The second part of step 12, tried to carry this message. And I didn't have a message for a long time. I really didn't understand. I didn't understand how this thing worked. I only realized in the past year how much I had been missing. I had the book knowledge, but again, I couldn't see how self-will was operating in my life. I love to talk about how to apply the steps in my life. I love to talk about the experiential part of this. What does it look like? You know, I go to a group now where they only talk about the present. How do we apply the solution in the day that we're in? How do we treat our alcoholism in the day that we're in? Because that's what matters. It doesn't matter what I did 20 years ago, because I have to keep growing. I love to talk about. This message is one of continued growth for me today. Because I heard a speaker say, not only is my disease progressive, but so is my recovery, which to me, that means that it takes less for me to become disturbed, not more. I know now what it feels like to be in peace and serenity. So I know when it's disturbed. So it doesn't take like a huge crisis anymore for me to go, oh, huh, I feel a little disturbed. What's going on? You know, and get back to the solution. And I love to pursue hearing speakers that talk about that. You know, how do I get God in that moment? You know, when I'm feeling self-pity, when I'm my brain starts going. You know, one time not long ago, my husband had made other plans and I didn't realize it. And, you know, we're not supposed to do that without checking with each other. That's the rules, right, of our house. And I wouldn't do that to him. And of course, you know, and all this stuff. And my brain starts going and I get into self-pity and it was like, I didn't have any recovery. I get into this place, you know, and I'm not even going to tell him what's wrong. I'll just wait for him to say, so. I mean, I got into all this crazy childish stuff, like so quickly. And the next day I could see all of it the next day. And I was really down about it. It was like an emotional relapse, you know, and I went to hear the speaker who said, I have to see, I'm used to crisis management. I'm used to calling on God when I have a problem. I haven't been very disciplined about calling on God when I don't have a problem. Kind of lazy. I want to do my own thing. Really, really, do we have to meditate each day? Do we have to do something each day? Do I have to pray? And I got nailed on it. It's like, you know, that's insurance. So when I need that, it's there. You know, I build that relationship with my higher power. And that way I can carry, I can live this thing. Oh, I slipped into principles and all our affairs, didn't I? Yeah. So to carry this message, I love working with newcomers now. I'm in the book so often. And when I'm taking them through the book and they're talking about their experience and how they connect with the book, with the what's in the book, I am constantly learning more. You know, I've learned so much from, you know, each person has a different perspective. Each person I sponsor is different. And I don't have a cookie cutter way of sponsoring either. I do take them through the book the way I was taken through the book. But some of them I read with them, some of them I don't. But we do go through it together and we point out things in there. And I was told I need to have a personal experience. I need to find myself in there so I know why I need it. I didn't drink like those old men. I got here young. I didn't get to the point where I had DTs or I lost lots of stuff. My outside life looked pretty manageable, but I had to find out it was the way I thought and the way I felt. And I also reached another place later on in sobriety where I got to another bottom. And I was taken through the book then on those unmanageable problems in my life and how I was living. And had another first step experience on the unmanageability of my life at 14 years and to see why I needed a higher power. But let's see, what are we on? 16 minutes. I didn't expect, so sponsoring has been a pretty new experience for me in the past year. And I didn't expect how much I would call on my relationship with my higher power in sponsoring, but it has been absolutely amazing. The very first time this woman had called me and she'd heard me speak at a meeting in California and she had she was feeling very hopeless. And she had parts of her story that I couldn't relate with, you know, she had some other things and I remember immediately feeling out of my depth and scared, like, wow, she sounds really bad. And I'm texting my sponsor going, are you free? Like, I need you help. I don't know what to do. And she wasn't getting back to me. And so I prayed and I said, God, help me. And it's really interesting. I don't know how this works for anybody else, but when I ask for help and I get the help, sometimes it comes in the form of a knowing that I apply words to, and sometimes I actually hear the words. They're almost like I hear them. I don't really hear them, but it's like I hear them. They're like formed words. And in this case, it was, she called you, share your experience. And And it was fast. You know, it came like boom, like that. The answer back came. And what came out of my mouth was to tell her about the three sides of the AA triangle. I said, you know, when my life is really bad, I can look at the three sides of the AA triangle, unity, service, recovery. You know, unity is the fellowship, going to the meetings, participating in a home group. Recovery is getting into the steps, finding a higher power through the steps, working with the sponsor, and service is carrying the message, sponsoring, getting involved that way. And she, by the end of the call, she was laughing and she said, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that. That's so much simpler than what I was thinking of. And by the next day, she'd taken action in two of the three sides of the triangle and she was feeling a lot better. So I've had so many examples of that, of when I do that. And, you know, because sponsees will come up with things all the time I don't know the answers to. And they're, you know, and they are each day. And I believe that my sponsor said, you know, this isn't about a human power telling you what to do. It's about you finding your relationship with your higher power. It's about, you know, she said, my two jobs as your sponsor, one is to teach you the 12-step program out of the book. Secondly, it is to remind you to seek the spiritual solution to your problem. She said, I don't know what experiences you need to have. I started dating my husband when he was 3 months sober after a relapse. It's been a very challenging relationship, partly because I was in it, but I've learned so much and I have been inspired to practice my program and grow up and stop being a child because I got the chance to be a partner again, to be in a marriage again. I wanted that. I'd hoped for that. But I also found out very quickly how selfish and self-centered I am, and I don't know how to get along with another adult. So, and I've learned patience and tolerance and love. I've had amazing experiences with, I tell it as part of my story about a fight that I had with my husband where I begged God for help and I was given the help, and you know, how much it's about giving and not receiving and how much I get from giving. I've experienced that. These are words and phrases that I've heard, but I had not experienced them until I was awake and started to use this in my life. Practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I, for some reason, this phrase is coming to my head and I'm just going to say it and then I'll explain it. Someone I admire says, if I can't practice the principles in all my affairs, sometimes I have to limit my affairs. And I immediately think about the alcoholics in my family. I feel like it's like a spiritual litmus test at this point in my life, how much I can, you know, because I do, I check in with that situation and see what's going on. And there's some difficulty there. I think I should be this person who can, you know, be the perfect daughter to all these other things. And we're recorded, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that. But, you know, and I revisit it and I do the best I can, and often I have to do it from a distance, and it's difficult. And this is just with active alcoholics in my family. But every time I hear that phrase, I think about that. You know, I know that's not where it only is, but for me, it's like, I feel like I'll reach some spiritual mountaintop when I can, you know, talk to a certain family member every day without getting hurt or something. I don't know. Like if I'm perfectly with my God, then I'll be able to do this. Not there yet. but it's definitely something that I think about, and I strive for it. I really do. I hope for that. And I keep doing the work partly because that's a motivation for me. But when I first started attending meetings on Zoom and especially going to the group that focuses on treating my disease in the present moment, I had noticed some places in my life where I was hurting people. And one of them is really kind of dumb. Okay. But I'm going to share it because it was the first place I noticed my alcoholism rearing its ugly head in the middle of my day. And it was at the grocery store. So here in Kentucky, we don't have enough environmental people here. I don't know, but plastic bags are quite popular. Okay. And I guess that's my little thing. Like, you know, we all got our stuff, whatever. I'll bring in like 6 reusable shopping bags to the grocery store, and I'm getting to the cashier and I'm checking which one I'm going to, which one has the good bagger that's not going to fill them halfway full and then ask me if I want a plastic bag and make me absolutely insane. Right. And I started to realize that this was a problem. This is like a little test of mine, you know, that how spiritually fit are you today, Elizabeth? Well, how are you going to treat the bagger at the grocery store? And it sounds stupid, but I mean, I really did start to notice this little thing. It's like, you know, this is where I can be. It became a thing. Like, can I make the bagger feel good about themselves? Like they did a good job. And I mean, I'm telling you, this is what happens. Even if they were using the bag, they start to put the potato chips on the bottom, and inside I'm a knot. My chest knots up. I'm like, they're putting the potato chips on the bottom. Like you know, like that kind of stuff. And I want to control the entire situation. And it was insane. It was absolutely insane. And I started to notice this, and then it was affecting my husband. He was like dreading every time we're finishing up a grocery trip. He didn't even want to be there. You know, it makes him feel terrible. Like he doesn't care. You know, and I'm thinking, but you don't understand. The bags will fall over in the car. The groceries will be, I'm projecting. It's insane. This is alcoholic thinking. It's everywhere. It's everywhere but here. And it's all about me and how I'm affected. It was crazy. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thing. Like I have to stop and look at that. And this person, like, I need to think about them. And I love, you know, in the 10th step, it says there's like four little parts. You know, first I have some kind of disturbance. First, I pray to God to remove it, the thought, disturbing thought. I talk to someone if I need to. I make amends if I've harmed someone. And then I turn my thoughts towards someone I can help. For me, I often think I'm helping people when I'm not. So that's a dangerous word for me because I'm like a recovering fixer. So I got to watch that. But if I think about, so another time I had a situation where I realized I had stepped on someone's toes. She seemed upset at me. I certainly didn't mean to. I had brought up a suggestion to improve a situation, but apparently, or it seemed like she might've taken it personally. Well, I don't really take things personally that aren't personal. I kind of did that kind of work a long time ago. But it looked like this other person might have taken something personally or as a threat to something that was important to her. And it was basically an AA group, and she was in charge of security. And I thought that something needed to be changed about how we were doing security, but then it seemed like I stepped on people's toes. And I looked back at the whole thing, and I noticed she spent quite a bit of time in her role. And I never really heard her talk about family or anything else going on in her life. And I thought, you know what, this might be really important to her. And the way that I came in and made this suggestion might have made her feel like something she was doing was wrong. Like I started to really think about her instead of me, because I was over here like, I didn't mean it as personal. Like I have all these excuses and defensive little comments about, you know, my intentions. I really didn't mean to hurt her, but I started to think about her and her experience with me. And her experience in the situation, instead of thinking like of who I can help, I try to think about the other person. What's important to them? How do they feel? What's their experience here? What are their challenges? It doesn't mean that I know for sure what they are, but if I can stop and think about another person more, it changes the whole thing. It changes how I act. It changes what I do. And then I'm able better to be the person that I think that my God wants me to be, you know? And I really do love that, you know, page 61, I think it says, are we not in our best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And I think about that a lot. I want to be a producer of harmony today. And if I can do that, then it doesn't matter if I'm right or wrong. It doesn't matter what I'm getting. And I have experienced the third step promises. When I stop thinking about what I'm getting out of life, because it's all I ever did before. I need. I need everything. I didn't have. I had these holes inside. When I can stop doing that and say, God, what do you want me to do? How can I be helpful and useful to someone else? I am given everything that I need. I feel whole. I feel God's love. That is the experience. That is what the steps give me, you know? And step 12 is at the end of all the other steps, you know? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that comes before that. There's stuff that comes before the promises we read a lot in step 9 and step 10. In my group, we read the 10 step promises. I have to get clear of the blockages. You know, there's a lot of garbage that was in there when I walked in. I tell newcomers, it's like, imagine your spring cleaning, you know? Because I'm real good about stuffing stuff in the back of a closet. I'm not even going to think about it. And then I do, it pops up. Oh, look, there's a situation that triggered me on this issue that I haven't dealt with. And then I get a chance to deal with it in the steps. I'm not sure what else to say, except that this is a way of life. If you're new, get into the steps. You know, it teaches me a different way to react, because I was always reacting to things and I didn't even know it. I would jump so far past. If I had fear, I wasn't going to admit it. I would immediately get defensive. I couldn't afford to feel those feelings. It was too scary. It was too much. You know, going through the book, actually working the steps, putting pen to paper, putting things out, talking to another human being, telling them what was going on inside me, getting that out. It's transformative. And then I get to be a person who doesn't react to life the same way. I can think about you. You know, I can care. And when I get off the beam, I can call someone and talk about it. I did it last night. I called someone and she helped me see something. Even her voice, like, I love this woman's voice. It's so soft. And the way she loves the world. She has a loving way about her that I learned from, you know, and it helps me see things differently and not be selfish and self-centered. And I pick up that phone today because I know what's going to happen. And I don't like to sit in that stuff anymore. Thank you so much for having me here. I love this group. And I hope that I've said something that's helped somebody. And I look forward to hearing people share back. Thanks.